So today we're going to look at Sefer Avadia, which is the smallest of the books of Tanakh. So we're going to do it in 1 week. And thus, this will be the last shiur for this month. Next shiur will be at the beginning of next month, potentially on the first Sunday. I'm not sure, that depends. People coming back from Poland trip, how many people here are going in Poland. So we'll see. There probably will be a shiur the first of the month. But this week we're going to do Sefer Avadia. So, as I mentioned, Sefer Avadia is the smallest of the Sfarim of Tanakh. One parak, 21 psukim. The way we're going to do it, we're going to briefly just talk about what Avadia contains, and then focus on two different things. First of all, when did Avadia live? And then second of all, when in history is the Nevuah talking about? So we'll do it again. We'll just start by saying the Nevuah, by and large, is entirely talking to the nation of Edom, rather than talking to the Jewish people. It's talking to Edom. Anyone know, by the way, where Edom is?
Southern Jordan.
Excellent. Yep. So if we imagine where the Dead Sea is, on the other side of the Jordan, and then a few further south than the Dead Sea, so parallel with the Negev of Israel, that is where Edom is. This Nevuah is entirely to the people of Edom. And that's the content of Avadia. Now what we're going to do is look at two things. First of all, who was Avadia? When did he live? Second of all, the content of Avadia, namely, when is this Nevuah talking about in history? What point in history is this prophecy talking about? Okay, so the first thing is, who is Avadia? If we look up the first passage of Avadia, it just says Chazon Avadia. The vision of Avadia does not tell you where he lived, does not give you his father's name, does not say kind of he lived at the same time as this king, as that king. He doesn't tell you when Avadia lived. So, Chazal say in Sanhedrin that Avadia is the same Avadia who's mentioned elsewhere in Tanakh. If we open up to Melachim Aleph, Perek Yud Ches, Pasuk Gimel. Pardon? Melachim Aleph, Yud Ches, Gimel. So this takes us to, if you want, we can start at the in Pasuk Aleph, Perek Yud Ches, Pasuk Aleph, it says Vayhi Yamim Ravim Udvar Hashem Haya El Eliyahu. So we're talking, this is at the time of Eliyahu. Anyone remember? I mean, we're going to see it. Who is the king at the time of Eliyahu?
Achav.
Very good. Achav and the queen is Ezebel. Which kingdom is he in? Remember? Yisrael. Yisrael, very good. Yeah, Achav is in the king of Israel. So if we look at so Eliyahu gets a message from Hashem. Then we look at Perek Gimel, Pasuk Gimel, it says Vayikra Achav El Ovad Yahu Asher Al Habayis. He calls Ovad Yahu, who was kind of in charge of his house, but Avadiyah Hayar Yoreas Hashemot. Avadiyah was very God fearing. And then Pasuk Zalad is also very significant. Vayhiba Achris Izevel is Nevi'e Hashem. And it was when Izevel, the wife of Achav, killed the Nevi'im of Hashem. Vayikach Avadiyah Me'on Nevi'im Vayachbi'im Chamish Mishma Ma'arav Vakil Kalam Lechem Amayim. Avadiyahu, as he described here, took the Nevi'im when Izevel went and tried to wipe out the Nevi'im. Avadiyahu took 100 Nevi'im and hid them and kind of sustained them and hid them away so Ezebel wouldn't be able to kill them. So this is Avadiyah in the time of Achav and Ezebel. And Chazal say that Avadiyah in the Sefer of Avadiyah was the same Avadiyahu who is in charge of the house of Achav. Therefore placing Avadiyah during the time of Achav. Yeah, questions?
Why would it say that he is Yirei Hashem?
So we'll come back to that point in a sec. I mean, I'll just say now. Seemingly, the understanding of the pshat here is that Avadiyah is going to hide away the Nevi'im, as in the queen is going around killing all the Nevi'im, and he fears Hashem. Namely, he wants to protect the Nevi'im and never hid them away. Seemingly, that's the reason it says that here. But we'll come back to that point. Yeah.
Is there a piece that shows the connections, or what are they based on?
Well, no. Then the Chazal make a further point. It was like a drasha based on this, and say that, and this is something we're going to touch on majorly in the second section. The idea that Edom. Anyone know who Edom is associated with in the Torah? Esav. And the idea, and Chazal say that the person Avadiyah, who lived in the midst of two Rashaim but didn't learn from their ways, was still God-fearing, should come and tell off the person Esav, who was a Rasha living amongst two God-fearing people. Namely, the person who was able to stay God-fearing, even surrounded by bad influence, should come and tell off Edom, who's Esav, who wasn't able to be good even with a good influence. He was a Rasha living amongst Tzadikim, and Avadiyah is a Tzadik living among Rasha. That's the connection Chazal make, and we'll come back to that connection later on. Yeah.
Who is Avadiyah's second Rasha?
Avadia Achav and Izevel. Yep. Okay. Fine. So that's Chazal say that Avadia was this Avadia at the time of Achav.
Eliyahu's housekeeper.
No, not Eliyahu, Achav's housekeeper.
Sorry.
Achav's housekeeper. Now the Ibn Ezra says that this is not that it's not that Avadia is not the same Avadia as at the time of Achav, and he brings one proof and one kind of one proof from the pasuk, the point of Yireh Hashem, and there's Ibn Ezra, and then one further point based on this. Firstly, he says that if Avadi was really a Navi, then it wouldn't have described Avadi in the pasuk Avadi Yireh Hashem Ma'od. It would have, because a higher level is to be a prophet. It would have said more than he's just Yireh Hashem. It would have said he was a Navi. Therefore, Ibn Ezra said it doesn't make sense that Avadi the Navi is described here as Yireh Hashem. Therefore, Ibn Ezra thinks it's not correct that Avadi this is the same Avadi. You're frowning. You don't like that?
What does it make a difference?
Well, because seemingly the way he explains it is that Navi is a higher level than Yireh Hashem. Therefore, my question to Ibn Ezra is that surely here in the context, the point is he's Yireh Hashem, namely he's going to hide away the Navi. That seems to be the
Navi?
Pardon? No, because that's not the point. The point is that he's Yireh Hashem. That's not the point.
The person, what do you mean?
No, he's describing the person, but in the context that he's hiding away the people. Therefore, it doesn't really make a difference to say whether he's a Navi or not. Like, you can debate. Okay, this is Ibn Ezra. Somebody says, yeah, I think that you can ask a question
maybe,
on it.
It's based off other places in Tanakh where it says Yireh Hashem for someone who is just a simple person.
Maybe. Okay. Yeah. Maybe. He doesn't bring any proof for that idea that anyone who's a Navi would never be called Yireh Hashem. He doesn't say that. He doesn't bring any proofs for that. But potentially. So the Ibn Ezra says that Avadia did not live, was not the same Avadia at that time. However, the Ibn Ezra makes an interesting point in terms of, which basically aims to date Avadia as living later than Achav. And the way he does that is as follows. If we look, turn back to Sefer Avadia, the first pasuk, there is one interesting feature of the pasuk which he says can help us work out when Avadia lived. It says, Chazon Avadia Koamar Hashem Elokim Le'edom, Shmua Shomanu Me'es Hashem. We have heard a hearing from Hashem. Now, what's interesting about that?
Plural.
Pardon?
Plural.
Yes. What do you mean, we have heard a hearing? So, English people obviously tell you that it is.
The royal we.
Very good. It could be the royal we, where the queen or whatever it is says we for everything, or one or whatever it is. Seeing as Avadia definitely did not live in England, therefore we must assume it was not the royal we. And therefore the question is, what does it mean, Shmua Shamanu? Therefore, the Ibn Ezra says it could be. You can answer it as just it's poetic. However, the Ibn Ezra says that this implies that he heard a nevuah that was also heard by other Nevi'im, and he says that both that Yirmiyah, Yeshaya, and Amos all received nevuahs about Edom. Therefore, he's at the same time as them. Now, that's interesting because he just mentions that it's that Yirmiyah, Yeshaya, and Amos all received nevuahs about Edom. However, I think that from those three, first of all, where in terms of Yirmiyah, Yeshaya, and Amos. Now, first of all, Yeshaya and Amos lived earlier than Yirmiyah. Yeshaya and Amos we dealt with a little bit. We mentioned them. Yeshaya, Amos, Micha, Hosea. They lived at the same time, and Yirmiyah lives a little bit later. So, however, of those three, it also seems the most likely. We're now taking the Ibn Ezra's idea further. I think we can prove from the Pesukim that it's of, if we're going to take his idea, that Shmua Shamanu means he received the same Nevoah as another Navi, it would seem to make most sense that Navi is Yirmiyah, and therefore we could say that Avadia would live at the same time as Yirmiyah. So, I want to prove that. So, again, the Ibn Ezra says that Shmua Shamanu means that. Implies that he heard a Nevoah. This Nevoah was heard by multiple people, namely multiple Nevi'im received Nevoahs about Edom. The Ibn Ezra mentions Yirmiyah, Yeshaya, and Amos, which is interesting, why he mentions those. First of all, because he actually could have mentioned about six or seven. There are many other Nevi'im who also talk about Edom. But it happens to be he mentions Yirmiyah, and actually taking his idea further of Shmua Shamanu implying it was at the same time as a Navi, we can prove from the text, I believe, that it was, in fact, Yirmiyah is the one who heard the same prophecy, and so that's what we're going to do now. Are you with me? Because again, now what we'll do is look at the text, and it will seem clear that there are some sukkim that are almost exactly the same, therefore implying that Yirmiyah and Avadi were the ones who received the same nevuah. So again, taking that idea of Ibn Ezra, Shmua Shamanu, and just refining it to be referring to specifically Yirmiyah. Okay, so if we open up to Yirmiyah Perek Mem Tes. Okay, so Yirmiyot Mem Tes Psukim. Well, from Posuk Zion, you can see that he starts talking to Edom. Yeah, people with me? People got it? From Posuk Zion, he starts talking to Edom. Now, let's have a look at Posuk Yud Dalet. Or tell you what, have you still got your finger on Avadia? Yeah. Turn back and look at the first Posuk of Avadia. Someone want to read it out? Okay, now someone read out Yom Yom Tessi Dalet. Okay, and just by the way, let's quickly do second pasuk as well. Barak, go for it. Let's do second pasuk in Avadia. Yep, and then anyone want to read? Ilan, you want to read Mem Tes Tesvav in Yirmiyah? Right, so we see that the psukim, these two psukim are basically exactly the same. Therefore, if we were going to use the Ibn Ezra's idea of two Nevi'im receiving the same Nevu'ah, it seems we can refine it down that not just it was multiple Nevi'im, but specifically we could refine it down and say that Avadia and Yirmiyah are receiving the same Nevu'ah. Therefore, that would seem to be a nice proof for the idea that Yirmiyah is at the same time as Avadia, namely they both received Shmua Shamanu, they both received the same Nevu'ah. And therefore, that would seem to allow us to date Avadia to being at the same time as Yirmiyah. Again, there's discussion, this is just one proof, but again, based on the Ibn Ezra's suggestion, I think we could take it one step further, and this would seem to show that Avadia is the same time as Yirmiyah. Yeah.
Does same Nevuah always necessarily mean that it was at the same time?
No, not necessarily. If you wanted to take
so
it
why
even...
why is that a proof?
Not necessarily. You can even take it a step further and say, Yirmiyah says, Shmua Shamati, I heard, and Avadia said, we heard. So Avadia is after one person said Avadia is the second person, that implies that he's the second one. But there wouldn't necessarily be a proof. If there wasn't that, it wouldn't necessarily be a proof. I think that definitely strengthens it. But it definitely seems likely if they both received a Nevuah that it's if they both received the same Nevuah with the same seemingly that is at the same time. You're right. That wouldn't be an absolute proof. I think the Shmati and and Shamanu that strengthens it even more. One sec. Yeah, Moses.
I was going to ask the same question.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
I would say a week of the if there are two Nevi'im that probably heard the same Nevi'im at the same time.
Why?
Because then one man is redundant for that time.
No, because you've got to look at the context, like, in what context did he say it? Namely, is he talking to Bnei Yisrael and he's talking to Edom? He's talking to Yisrael, he's talking to Yehuda. So you have
yeah,
that. It's not. So you can have the and we'll see. We'll see this as we go through. We'll see similar nevuahs, but being brought in different contexts at different times. We will see that. Even at the same time, but there can be multiple different contexts in which they're brought, which would mean they're not redundant.
Is all the Ibn Ezra here?
Pardon? No, the Ibn Ezra says the idea of Shmua Shamanu implying that multiple Nevi'im heard it, and he quotes multiple. However, I think we can refine it down and say that textually it seems most likely that it's specifically Yirmiyah is the one based on this. He just says they all took Edom and they do. But here it seems to be the closest textual.
Could you say he mentioned also?
I'm not sure why he mentioned those. Yeshai and Amos. Again, they all have explicit sections dealing with Edom. Maybe the other Nevi'im we talk about don't have explicit sections in the same way. But I'm not sure why he brought those as opposed to others. Potentially because of the second thing, I'm not sure. Okay, so that's the first section. Again, the different opinions about when Avadia was. Now, in terms of content, as we mentioned, the Nevuah is about Edom. Primarily, most of it talks about the fact that Edom is going to be destroyed for various sins they do. The first few psukim talking about the destruction, then Psukim Yud on was talking about the sins they did, and finally talking about that in the end, Bnei Yisrael will be saved, and then talking about the Acharis Ayamim, the future, the coming of Mashiach, or seemingly some future time when Bnei Yisrael will kind of emerge victorious from this. And the question is, what time in history is being referred to? What is kind of what are the sins of the Edom? When are they being destroyed? Why are they being destroyed? That is what we're going to look at now. And we're going to look at two different kind of schools of thought, Radak and Ibn Ezra. And what I mean by schools of thought is both the ideas of Radak and Ibn Ezra, and then taking them a little bit further as well. Okay, so the Ibn Ezra says that what this is referring to is the Edom helped out during the destruction of the first base Mikdash. Again, the destruction of the first base Mikdash was done by
Bavel,
Nebuchadnezzar, Nebuchadnezzar Adan. So, however, Edom helped out, and indeed we know from historical evidence as well, we know that Edom indeed did kind of take part and did kind of take part to Eretz Yisrael at that time. So Edom helped out kind of with the Chorban. That is what is being described, again, that Ibn Ezra is talking about. If we look at, for example, we look at Perek Aleph Posig Yud. That's when it starts again. Until Posig Yud, it's talking about the fact that Edom will be destroyed and they're going to be punished. From Posig Yud, it starts explaining why. You stood there when they were being kidnapped, and then and it also then talks about you doing things yourself, not just standing by. And the Ebenezer says this is referring to the destruction of the first base of Mikdash, because you took part in it in some sense, therefore you're being punished. Now, one potential proof of this is if, based on what we just said, if indeed Ovadia is living at the same time as Yirmiyah, then potentially we could even say that this is not just talking about a prophetic vision that Edom will do this, but in fact Yirmiyah saw the Chorban, potentially Ovadia also saw the Chorban, and then he's talking that the Nevuah is, he's seen that they've actually done this and they've contributed somewhat, they've taken part in the Chorban, and therefore he is there's prophecy about it, but the actions that Edom have done potentially is not just a prophetic vision. They're going to do this, but in fact, Avadia has in fact seen it as he potentially witnessed the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash. So that fits nicely this idea that it's talking about the first Beis Hamikdash with the fact that Avadia potentially lived during the time of the destruction of the first Beis Hamikdash. However, what I want to do now is also develop a little bit, and maybe this is different than learning the. Kind of the pshat of Avadia itself, but this is kind of taking a theme through Tanakh, basically the relationship between Yisrael and Edom, and this is kind of a different way of looking at Tanakh, rather than just looking at the theme as it comes within Avadia. We'll see it links in and helps us understand parts of Avadia, but understanding a theme generally, how it plays out throughout history, so that's what we're going to do a little bit now, and we'll see how it links into this school, this area that we're discussing, this way of understanding Avadia, as talking about the destruction of the first base of Mikdash. Okay, so again, we say we're now kind of backtracking. We're going to look at the general relationship between Bnei Yisrael and Edom, and then come back and show how that links into our understanding of this happening at the time of the destruction of the first Beis Hamikdash. Okay, so as we mentioned, and for this we're going to turn to Bereishis. Edom is associated with. Anyone happen to know when that association is made? Pardon? Indeed, Esav is described. He's described. He himself is physically red, and he also there's the pasuk of "Give me this red stuff." But in fact, it's far more explicit than that. If we look at Vidyuk, if we look in Perek Lamed Vov pasuk Aleph, Perek Lamed Vov is when it lists the descendants of Esav. Again, so this is in Bereishis, Perek Lamed Vov pasuk Aleph. It says, "Ve'ela told us Esav who Edom." It says explicitly, these are the generations of Esav, who is Edom. So Esav is explicitly associated with Edom. Now, what we're now going to do is analyze the relationship between Yaakov and Esav, and then see how that kind of follows throughout the Torah. And again, we're not going to go through the entire Tanakh, but then kind of come back to Avadia a little bit to understand it. If you had to describe the relationship between Yaakov and Esav, how would you describe it? How does the Torah describe it? Struggle, difficulty. Already, again, in Toldos, before they're born, it says that they'll be fighting. They are fighting in the womb. They will be fighting. One of them will win. One of them will lose, etc. Then you have the fight over the Bechorah, who's the firstborn. You have the fight over the Bracha between Yaakov and Esav. Then later, again, with the meeting in Vayishlach, the fighting at the river, etc. So a lot of struggle, a lot of fighting between Yaakov and Esav. Now what we're going to do is focus on one specific part of kind of that struggle and see then how that potentially could have impacted on the relationship later on between Bnei Yisrael and Edom. So if we turn to the end of Toldos, which is when Yaakov is giving the bracha, again supposedly to Esav, but ends up giving, Yitzchok is giving the bracha supposedly to Esav and then to Yaakov. Does anyone remember, what does the bracha actually say? What is the bracha? Pardon? Nope, that's the bracha given to Avram. What is the bracha given to?
You'll be master of your brother.
Indeed, that is part of it. Let's look at Kaf Zayin Kaf Ches. Pardon? That actually is also somewhat mentioned already at the beginning when Rivka asks about the nations already mentioned there. But it's also, yes, it does say it here as well. Okay, so if we look at Kaf Zayin Kaf Ches, V'yitan l'cho elokim mitala shemayim mishmanei aretz v'rov dogom esirosh, you will be given from the dew of the land and from the fat of the earth. Basically, this is talking about you'll have physical prosperity. And then also hevei gvir l'achecha, you'll be a master of your brother. So it's saying that basically you are, again, it's both talking about physical prosperity and you being a master of your brother. Now what we're going to try and show is how this bracha, and we're going to see it again in the lifetime of Yaakov and Esav, one of the understandings of the fact that Yaakov gave the bracha to Esav, you can maybe understand it as a function of the birthright, but also as a function of this bracha, again the fact that bracha talks about physical prosperity, is the idea that Yaakov, seeing as he is now kind of the chosen son, Hevei Gevir L'Achecha, he is the one who got the bracha, he's the master, and he's also going to have the physical prosperity. That links into the idea that Yaakov inherits the land of his father, as opposed to Esav, who doesn't. So the way we're going to see this is if we turn to Perek Lamed Vov, it says that, Perek Lamed Vov, Posik Vov, it says, "Vayikach Esav es nashov es bonov es bnesov es kolim shosh beisov es kneves kol bem teves kol kinah sher achas beretz kanan." Vayelech el eretz mipnei Yaakov achiv. Vayeshev Esav bahar seir. It says that Esav took all his stuff, all that he had from Canaan, and it says he went away and settled in the land of Seir. And indeed, Edom ends up over the generations. Edom ends up being in the land of Seir on the other side, kind of outside of Eretz Yisrael. Whereas if we look at first Pasuk of Perek Lamed Zayin, it says that Vayeshev Yaakov be'eretz megurei aviv be'eretz Canaan, that Yaakov lived in the land where his father had lived in Eretz Canaan. So similarly, again, we can either see it potentially as a function of the brachas, maybe as a function of the birthright, that Yaakov lives in the land of Canaan. It says megurei aviv, it stresses the land of his father, because that seemingly is part of the idea that Yaakov is the chosen son, is that he lives in the land of his father, as opposed to Esav goes to live in Seir, not where his father lives. Seemingly that already in the life of Yaakov and Esav is kind of a clear symbol of Yaakov is the chosen, again potentially due to receiving the bracha or due to the bechora, whatever it is, it seems clear that Yaakov is the chosen one living where his father lives, as opposed to Esav is now outside, he's living in Seir rather than in the land of Canaan. So again, what we're trying to say is that the living in the land of Canaan is a symbol of the fact that Yaakov is the chosen one to continue on. Avram came to the land, Yitzchak lived in the land, Yaakov lived in the land, he's the one carrying on, as opposed to Esav, who's now outside. Now, what we're going to see is this also plays out in the Torah. We're not going to look at this inside, but anyone think of how this might play out in the Torah? The idea that we'll talk about Edom rather than Esav, how the idea of living in the land for the Jews is very, very significant, and how that impacts their relationship with Edom. Can I think about it? Indeed, Edom doesn't let them cross through their borders. Potentially, you can understand like this, that Edom does not want when Bnei Yisrael are coming towards the land of Canaan, Edom does not let them pass through their borders. Potentially, because for them, the idea that the Jewish people would live in the land of Canaan, that's kind of a statement of you are the chosen people, and they don't want to concede. Exactly. The bracha doesn't say explicitly you will live in the land of Canaan, but we see already in the lifetime of Yaakov and Esau that idea is already on the table. Therefore, it seems clear that that is representative of being the chosen son, is the fact that they live in Eretz Yisrael. Seemingly. Yes. Fulfillment of the bracha, or the sign that Yaakov is the chosen son rather than Esau. Yeah.
Doesn't Edom become Rome?
We'll get there. We'll get there. Okay. Where were we? Yes. So what we were trying to say is that potentially the Edom and Yisrael, the idea of living in the land of Canaan was a symbol of who was going to be the chosen son, who was going to carry on, continuation of Avram Yitzchak. Is it Yaakov or is it Esav? Now again, we could talk about this through Tanakh, and Edom features all the way through Tanakh. What I now want to do is link it back to our discussion in Avadia. As he mentioned, when the Bnei Yisrael are exiled, he said that they helped out in the goddess with the destruction. By the way, I mentioned that we know that from historical evidence. We also have in Tehillim, if people look in Tehillim Kuf Lamed Zayin, it says that Bavel helped out. It says that Edom helped out with the Babylonians with the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. Sorry, I just forgot to mention that before. So again, we're focusing on the idea that Edom helped out with the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. Now, put in this context, potentially we can understand the reason Edom would join in is because for them, the idea that the Bnei Yisrael are now leaving Eretz Yisrael is for them a symbol, oh, you're no longer the chosen people. And they kind of come in, they try to conquer it, they try to make sure the Jews come out. And I think what this can help us explain, is if we look in the last five psukim of Avadia. Last five psukim, again, it talks about the idea that in the end, Bnei Yisrael will come to Eretz Yisrael. Now, if we look, Pasuk Yud Zayin, Uvahar Tzion Tzief Letov Yakodesh, V'yorshu Beis Yaakov Es Moros Shehem, and Beis Yaakov will inherit their inheritance. Again, if we look at Pasuk Yud Tes, V'yorshu Anegev Es Har Esav Ashrelo Es Ablizim, V'yorshu Sidei Ephraim Es Sidei Shomron Uvinyomin Es Hagilot. The idea that it now talks about the Bnei Yisrael re-inheriting Eretz Yisrael potentially is part of this greater story. Namely, the whole way through there is this back and forth that the land is the symbol of rule of being the chosen son. Therefore, the idea that's why it talks about the end of this punishment of Edom. It talks about the fact, and the Jews will come back and receive their land. Namely, the Jews are the chosen son. They are still are the chosen people. That's why it's part of the story. That's why the discussion of Eretz Yisrael is brought in here when we're telling of Edom telling their punishment for helping out in the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. What we're saying is you were destroying the Beis HaMikdash as part of your statement, trying to show that Yaakov is no longer the chosen son. What we're saying is that in the end Yaakov will re-inherit this land, and therefore they are still as a sign that they still are the straight continuation of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov.
Okay. Is it also saying that he'll inherit the land that Esav?
True, it does say that. But I would say at this point that actually the point that is, again, according to this pshat, this is somewhat ancillary to that. Like, it's true, but it's not they will conquer them in the war as well. But there's more to it than just that. It's also part of a greater thing. Another way, by the way, you see the centrality of the whole this relationship going back all the way to Yaakov and Esav is the idea that Avadia talks about Yaakov and Esav a lot. He mentions, he more often says the word Esav in referring to Edom than he uses the word Edom. So you see that it's not just talking about Edom the people, but that seems quite a clear indication that this is referring to a greater narrative than just the people of Edom and Israel. And I think that the way we've explained it, that relationship throughout about the importance of the land of Canaan and about this fight the whole way through, that's an important part of that. I would add one further thing, which is this is already a little bit more of a jump, and again, this is much, much more speculative than what I've been saying till now. Until what I've been saying till now kind of flows very well, both straight out of the text and based on the other sources we said. This is far more speculative. Is, as you mentioned, the Chazal later say that Edom is symbolic for Roman Empire, which we'll come to later, and Christianity. Now, those are not the same thing, because potentially you could say they're the same thing, but at the time, Chazal were already calling the Roman Empire Edom long before it was Christian, so therefore you could say that mutated then into Christianity, but potentially on its own right it was Christianity. And it's interesting, because where did it come from, this idea that Edom is Christianity? Why Edom more than Ammon, Moab, anyone? Where did it come from, the idea that Edom is referring to Christianity? Potentially you can say that if you see this whole story as part of the greater narrative of who's the chosen people and who's not, that the whole battle between Edom and Bnei Israel is about who's the chosen one and who's not, that fits very well with the idea of suddenly early Christianity, the discussion of who's the real chosen people and who's not. Pardon? No, Islam doesn't fit in. There is no reference in Chazal to Islam, because main reason is? Yeah, Islam was founded in 6th. Muhammad died in 632, and the Gemara was closed in the year 500, so there we go. But there are midrashim that talk about later midrashim that do talk about Islam. But the idea that Edom is Christianity, if you understand this whole story as being about the general battle between Yaakov and Esav and who is the chosen son, then you can understand how. And this is far, far more speculative, and this is a major area of discussion. There's a lot of sources out there, so this is very, very speculative. That potentially the linkage of Edom to Christianity is based on this. Story the whole way through of Edom, of Esav and Yaakov, who's going to be the chosen child. That fits in with the idea that it would then be Christianity. Is also the story of Edom. Okay, but that's far more speculative. But that's again the first kind of way of understanding Avadia is that it's talking about the Edom destroying the this destruction at the time of the first base of Mikdash. It's part of this greater story of Yaakov and Esav playing all the way through. From when they were from the life of Yaakov and Esav all the way through to here, focusing on Eretz Yisrael and who is the main son, and that potentially, again speculatively, is also the implications of linking Edom to Christianity. The second way of interpreting Avadia, the second kind of way of looking at it, is based on the Radak. The Radak himself is based on Chazal, and it starts with that rather than as the Ibn Ezra did, seeing this discussion of the destruction of Edom. Happening, this punishment happening after the destruction of the first base of Mikdash, it's actually referring to what happened at the time of the second base of Mikdash. And now this is where we now go to what Chazal said. Chazal say in the Sifri and other places that Edom refers to Rome, as you mentioned, and therefore the Radak took that not just as a drash, but so seriously that the Nevuah here about Edom is a Nevuah about Rome, namely Rome came and destroyed the second base of Mikdash. This is a Nevuah about the Romans destroying the second base of Mikdash and how they're going to be punished for that. So again, rather than interpreting about the people of Edom who lived during the time of the first base of Mikdash, Edom is symbolic, is referring to Rome, as Chazal say, and that means that the entire Nevuah is referring to Rome. Okay. Now, in terms of this, what we're going to do is look at kind of two different aspects of, or a few different aspects of this linkage between Edom and Rome. Namely, how did we get to this linkage between Edom and Rome? So the Rav Sadia Gaon, and this is seemingly true from, we'll leave the Rav Sadia Gaon for now. The first way of looking at it is, and this is going to be the main way, is going to be looking at it, that this is not talking about that genetically, kind of Edom, the people of Edom, became kind of their children became the Romans. Rather, it kind of symbolically, or there are certain descriptions of Edom that fit Rome better than descriptions of other people. Two major examples that are given is, first of all, the idea in the Torah where it says about Esav that al charb rochot tichyeh, they'll live by the sword. That was potentially a reference to Rome, who also were a very powerful kind of empire conquering large sections of the world. A second one is actually from Sefer Avadia, where it describes Edom as an eagle. And obviously the fact that the symbol of the Roman Empire was an eagle, that also is potentially a linkage between Edom and, but where's that? That's Parak Aleph Pasuk, there's only Parak Aleph, Pasuk Dalet of Avadia. So that is, yeah.
Is
in Avadia. So that those are two potential kind of...
Edom is referred to as an eagle elsewhere?
Pardon?
Edom is referred to as an eagle.
That's the first way of looking at this idea that Edom is Rome, is that there are the idea of the eagle and the idea of Al-Kharbat-Khatikhiyah, two suggestions given for how Chazal came to this idea that Edom refers to Rome. However, the second way of looking at it is potentially to try and find some kind of genetic link, some kind of link between Edom and Rome. Well, again, what I'm going to say is kind of a direction. Potentially it's true. I'll say probably not, again, quite speculative, which is the following. Again, just by the way, Rav Sadia Gaon, in talking about the first parish, says that the Chazal did not intend for it to be genetically true, because, again, if we think about the people, Edom is the south of Jordan. Rome is a long way away. However, what we're going to do now is talk a little bit about where the Roman Empire came from, and potentially see how you could find a link between Rome and Esav. So, anyone know, how did the Roman Empire get there?
allegedly through.
I knew when I was referring this that I would ask that question. I knew it would be Rafi who has the answer. Let's say
to my Latin coursework, if you must know.
Exactly.
So Aeneas was the lone survivor of Troy, and he goes off to live in Italy. And his descendants.
Where's Troy?
Troy is sort of Western Turkey.
Yes, Troy is in Western Turkey. That's where Trojan Horse story. Homer's Trojan story supposedly happens. Pardon? Great movie. Yep. Yeah. Yes. So from Troy, Aeneas ran away, and
his descendants are allegedly Romulus and Remus.
Yes.
Romulus who founds Rome.
And Remus founds Rome. Yes, indeed. So the mythical founding of Rome in about the year minus 800 or so comes from this prince running away from Western Turkey to Rome and to Italy, and from there comes the city of Rome and then the kingdom of Rome. Now, in terms of trying, so then what we need to do is, well, if we could find some way of linking the people of Troy to Aesop, then we could say that, okay, if it's true that the Roman Empire came from Western Turkey, then can we show that Western Turkey, the people of Western Turkey, were descendants of Aesop? The answer is no, we can't. But the only potential link is that Aesop, the people who lived there in the time of Tanakh were the people of Chais, the Chittim, and the only potential link is that one of Aesop's wife was a Chitti. So were, if it happened to be that one of her children went back or something, as in he, one of his wives was from there, therefore that area, and in fact it's not just that area, but Troy itself was a Hittite city at that time. So were that wife to have gone back, and potentially were any of the children to have gone back, then potentially we can find even a generational link between Aesop and Rome, literally, again, through the Chais, Western Turkey, going to Italy and then Rome. So potentially we can find a generational link, but somewhat unlikely. So we tried, but I think that's it. Okay, and there we go.
Sure.